Welcome to Catalytic Curiosity. I'm your host, James with a Y O'Farren with Catalytic Conversations. I serve remote professionals and hybrid organizations with coaching, consulting, and training to help them reconcile humanity and technology, leading to healthier, digitally integrated lives and teams. On this podcast, I am embarking on a journey of discovery to unearth the roots of digital mastery and maturity beyond mere adulting. I interview insightful and intriguing experts, exploring how we can develop sage-like maturity with intention in today's digitized world. Today's episode brings Sean Reed to the table to talk about how remote teams can develop powerful connections with each other that drive productivity and deepen engagement. Sean Reed is the president and head coach of Arrowhead Coaching and Facilitation Solutions and is also a deacon of the Orthodox Church of America in Ontario, Canada. During our conversation, we talked about meaning, belonging, identity, how to be more integrated as humans, and how to be intentional about authenticity in the workplace, giving practical examples on how you can develop a company culture that supports these things in a safe environment. I am really looking forward to you joining us today, and let's go. Welcome to the Catalytic Curiosity corner of the internet over here with myself and with Sean, with Deacon Sean, my friend from the OCLI network and coaching network that we have there for Orthodox coaches, which is, I'm just really enjoying the value that I've been getting out of that. And we've had a couple conversations since then personally about all kinds of fun stuff. And I really wanted to bring him on here as a fellow coach and as someone who has really great insight into humanhood and human nature and things like that. And we're going to be talking a bit about remote teams and powerful connections and things like that. So Deacon Sean and Coach Sean, whichever way you want to go with this, let's dive into this. Like what, first off though, like what really makes you resonate with coaching and why you chose that and what's important about that to you in context with this?
Mm-hmm. What I love about, well, first of all, thanks, James. Awesome to be here with you. What attracted me first to coaching was about 3 years ago. I really got into coaching as a business and started my own company and that sort of thing. What attracted me first about coaching was just the motivation to help people one-on-one. I just really... Man. I wanted to move it. I had a 25-year corporate career. In that corporate career, I had had coaches myself. I'd had different people who were helping me at different points in my journey. And also I had the opportunity, you know, people at different times in the different companies or organizations that I work with, people would just, you know, come into the office at different times and I'd have a chance to kind of journey with them personally and through different challenges, whether that was relational dynamics at work or some work life kind of issues or other challenges. And I loved that. I loved when I could have a deeper relationship with the people that I was, you know, around 9 to 5. And so my first motivation was, you know, how can I kind of take that and bottle it up and actually do that as a regular thing. But for me, that really just boiled down to helping. Mm-hmm. Once I actually started learning about and training in actual coaching, I realized what makes coaching particularly unique relative to therapy and training and mentoring and other modalities. Mm-hmm. I have a ton of time for those other modalities. We need them all.
Oh, absolutely. But they're all synergistic.
What I love about coaching is the utter lack of judgment and the lack of, in coaching, you're not inserting your own solutions into the story. You're actually facilitating a process for the client where they're developing their own solutions. Or you might be, you know, in some cases, you might be, you know, opening up other perspectives for them that perhaps they weren't aware of or they hadn't considered. But that's very different from saying, here's what I did, or here's the five steps you should take through this.
Right.
And this is a much more servant-like role, in my opinion. This the coach is much, it takes a more of a servant's posture, an enabling posture, where the client really leads. And I just love that. That just fits really well with my values and my kind of way of thinking about things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always, when I'm talking, doing an intake session or in a strategy call, I always help people to, I frame it in the context of like three categories of what I call growth catalysts, where people come alongside and catalyze growth. And like there's the educators, people who are adding information, helping you develop a skill or a knowledge or whatever, like a mentor does that through adding personal experience. There's different categories. And then you have consultants who aren't helping you become an expert. They're kind of being the expert for you. Mm-hmm. And so they're diagnosing a situation and providing expert advice, or they're prescribing a solution for you to use, right? And then you have the third category of facilitators, like what you were describing, where they're facilitating a process of discovery in either a group or in an individual and on their journey, and, you know, journeying with them, like you said earlier, which I really love that way of phrasing it.
Yeah.
And like those three categories are, you know, distinct things, and they all work in synergy with each other, but you don't want to mix them up.
Right. Well, you don't want to pretend they're all the same.
That's a better way of putting it. Yes.
You know, it's as a truthfully, as a coach in my practice,
we swap out hats sometimes.
We swap out hats. You know, there are times when that is needed, but you don't want to pretend that when what you're doing is training or mentoring, you don't want to call that coaching, because it's not actually coaching.
Not the same thing. Exactly. Clarity of terms is super important.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. So let's look at teams, and particularly in our modern world, in our almost more modern world now post-COVID, with people all suddenly being forcibly transitioned all remote, and then people realizing that sometimes they're like, we like this. Someone that's saying we don't like this, but we're still stuck with it. Some people say, no, I don't want anything else. but like every company out there seems to have to wrestle with this on some level of what do you do with the remote team and all the challenges that come into play with that. That there's challenges that arise, you know, from a personal level of how do you organize your life when you don't have this clear divide spatially between being at home and being at work. And that can cause all kinds of personal disruptions and routines and things, which is challenging. But it's also on the organizational level, how do you connect with people that you can't shake your hand with them? Like when you're not on a regular basis, or maybe never, you know, I know people who hire somebody remote and they go through their entire term of employment and never actually meet anybody in the other rest of the company. Yeah. And sometimes that's good and it works out great. And sometimes it doesn't work out great.
Yeah.
What makes a difference, do you feel like, to be able to create, you know, actual engagement with people who are working remotely?
Yeah. So just for background for your listeners, for starters, I do work with leadership teams quite a bit as part of my coaching practice. I work with leadership teams typically in smaller growth oriented enterprises, or
like more startups and entrepreneur type.
Yeah, startup and entrepreneurial, or, you know, with small management teams, sort of between three to six or so in a management team, that kind of size.
Good scale.
And or in the not-for-profit sector, and specifically with church leadership teams. And in
a very similar mindset, do you find?
In some ways they are, and in some ways
very, very different, obviously.
They're very different. But some of the challenges, particularly when it comes to things like, you know, scarcity of resources and people wearing multiple hats and those sorts of things, that definitely there are some parallels there that you bump into. In terms of remote teams, what I've noticed in the healthiest organizations as they've been moving through this, you know, pandemic and adapting, and where they might have gotten together more in person, they're definitely now getting together over Zoom more regularly. In some cases, actually, some of these, especially the technology companies that I work with, actually their teams are just from all over. That's where the talent is. you know, you have teams that are made up of folks from, one of my clients has team members in India, Denmark, United States, and Canada, you know, and that's just normal for them. The thing that I noticed amongst the healthiest of those teams, mm-hmm. the highest performing of those teams, are really three characteristics. Okay. The first is that they practice authenticity. Like they mm-hmm. actually work at being, and they take specific action to be authentic with each other on a regular basis, outside of just sort of of course you'd be, you know, you want to be authentic whether you're dealing with the day-to-day of business, right. But actually how do we have an even bigger openness with each mm-hmm. other? And there's a real, and that gets to the second point, which is intentionality. There's a deliberateness to this. In other words, you know, the kind of connection that we're talking about in the healthiest remote teams doesn't happen by accident. You have to be really intentional
yeah.
about cultivating that openness and that authenticity and that vulnerability with each other. Mm-hmm. And the last piece of that is also related, and that's consistency. Mm-hmm. Consistently, you know, taking action to facilitate connection and authenticity and vulnerability. And it is remarkable to see there are lots of complex and also simple ways to facilitate that within the team, but it is remarkable to see what happens when these remote teams are intentional in that way. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would say some of the teams that I've been working with over the last year or so who've been operating exclusively on Zoom, mm-hmm. I would say are some of the strongest and most cohesive teams I've ever either worked That's with awesome. Or been a part of.
That's awesome.
And it's because of this intentional, consistent, yeah. intentional authenticity.
You have to do it on purpose. Honestly, you have the intentionality and then the consistency, and that speaks to me of a system.
Yep.
A planned system for being successful in this. And you mentioned with authenticity, where it's not just authenticity in, you know, I'm having integrity in getting my job done on time. It's a broader sense. And is that like, would you describe that as bringing more of ourselves into play? Not just like maybe less of a quarantining of our work selves and our personal selves as separate people, bringing more of an integration. Is that part of that possibly?
It's exactly that. It's you know what it is? It's bringing our whole selves to work, which, you know, the whole compartmentalization of self was an illusion to start with. So it's acknowledging,
So glad people are saying that now, finally. You know,
it only took us, you know, millennia to figure that out. But, you know, it's being intentional
mm-hmm.
about recognizing the whole person.
Right.
And so, you know, that's about exploring what gives us meaning. Who are we on our worst days? What motivates us? What demotivates us? What are our values? All these kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. The more we can explore those for ourselves, and then share those with our team members, our coworkers, the stronger and more cohesive our team ends up being. It's kind of amazing. The deeper we go into ourselves, the stronger the connections we have with others around us.
You know, you mentioned vulnerability earlier. And I think that's a big part of this, because in my model that I use for helping to understand relationships and society and cultures and communities, at the atomic level, all systems of human organizations are at the foundation of individual connections. And those connections are formed by an exchange of vulnerability that leads to trust.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when you're talking about this level of, you know, sharing of ourselves, bringing of ourselves to, you know, creating this exchange of the more we can bring of ourselves, of our values, of our principles, of our likes, our dislikes, our struggles, our strengths, bringing those into play and bringing them into the conversation, that prompts an exchange, like a mutual exchange. Like, oh, he's bringing himself, I need to bring myself and be more vulnerable. And if you're in a safe environment, right, which is a huge part of the whole, we're talking about a healthy organizational structure, a healthy team, that implies, you know, there's safety for people to be vulnerable and to share so that they can create these kinds of connections. What kinds of, going back to the systems idea, what kinds of systems have you seen that are successful in creating a place where people can share themselves with vulnerability and create that authenticity?
Yeah, I mean, systems or habits or
processes,
you know, whatever term you want, it's that repeatability,
right?
You know, it's that rhythm. So one of the simplest tools that I work with a few of my clients to introduce into their companies is a lunch and learn program. And so it's not a lunch and learn program where you're sharing kind of best practices on business tactics.
Yeah.
It's a lunch and learn program focused on really understanding where we find meaning in our work and understanding what gives us meaning, what gives us joy, what gives us purpose in our work. And the learning happens not from one person teaching, you know, multiple people an audience, but it's actually a peer learning format where as people are doing the discovery for themselves, they're then sharing what their insights are that they're learning about themselves. And then their colleagues are learning and building off of those insights through a facilitated process of listening, connecting, and augmenting the ideas and insights that come out of each other's self-discovery. And it's a remarkable process of learning about ourselves by learning about each other. It's simple in the sense of there's not loads of pre-reading. There's a little bit of, you know, reflective work that's done, but it's extraordinarily easy to implement and powerful in terms of creating cohesion and, you know, deep connection with each other, with your colleagues.
I love that. And so is it like you just have like on a regular basis, like is this like a weekly or
a weekly? Usually it's done as a weekly for about 75 minutes.
It's like the same prompts each time, and it goes around the table, or you have like new things each time, or
so there are different themes. Typically what we'll do is we'll take about a 6-week sprint and we'll move through, you know, a question: what gives us meaning in our work? What biases exist in us or what motivates us? What is our worldview? These kinds of questions.
Deep questions.
And I'll tell you what, you learn a lot about your team by seeing how people respond to that. And
not always by the content of the response, but the way they relate to the content of the response, possibly.
The way they relate to the content of the response, the way they relate to each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, and the criteria is not necessarily, you know, is everybody participating? Because there are introverts and there are extroverts, and the facilitator's job is to make sure that everybody has a chance to engage.
Right.
But it's actually more about, does the introvert feel welcomed into the space and then respected safety for their particular approach? Pardon me?
Going back to the safety.
is it a safe space?
Yes.
You know, this is not political correct jargon. This is legit. This is about, do I absolutely have a place? This is about belonging.
Yes.
Do I belong here? Do I feel like people are making space for me to be a part of this as well?
Yes. And you said the word meaning, I think, four times so far. And then you just said belonging. And I think those two are so deeply connected, where we find meaning in our lives by where we find belonging.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. One of my favorite books is by Dan Pink. It's called Drive. Mm-hmm. He talks about the three intrinsic motivating factors, and he calls them autonomy, mastery, and purpose as the three core things that drive us. And I've looked at that. And I'm like, you know, I get what he's saying, but I think the purpose dimension of that could more accurately be termed connection, because we find purpose not in abstract ideals or things like that. We find purpose and meaning in a sense of belonging and connection to a community and other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really what drives our action. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it forms our identity.
Yes, absolutely.
It ends up being an amplifier, both a reflection and an amplifier of our values.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like you are your community in a way.
Yes.
You know,
like, yes.
You are the people that you're around, the people, mm-hmm. the place that you're a part of. Mm-hmm.
There's a resistance to that in our like individualist society. We want to be defined by what distinguishes ourselves from other people. But that's almost kind of similar to that idea of that separation of, you know, your work self versus your home self, and then your play self. And you've got all this diffraction of identity. When instead, if we think of it in context of like concentric layers of belonging, like I am a part of my identity is the family group that I belong to. And then the vocational group that I belong to, and these recreational groups, like these are all concentric layers of belonging that I have that give me in unity, define me and give me shape and direction in my life.
Yeah. This is one of my, you know, beefs with much of the kind of contemporary self-help industry jargon is this, there's this sort of this very shallow self-love, you know, it's a self-love that does nothing but offer platitudes and self-affirmations to each other and never actually does the actual loving work of looking at yourself deeply and asking important questions about the person you are. But the other side of that shallow self-love that's sort of so prevalent in the industry right now is it denies our basic need to belong, our basic need for each other. That's we are not fully human if we are not in community.
Yes.
We just aren't.
That's, you know? Yes. And this is something that I actually struggled with when I was moving into the coaching space, because there's so much of that kind of a mindset in a religious context. A lot of it's like, you know, the prosperity gospel type of stuff that's kind of in that water where you're just like all, you know, almost like a greedy, selfish self-orientation that yet demolishes the self. And it's so much in the water of the coaching industry. And when I say I want to differentiate myself from that, and this is also the same time as I was processing through, you know, entering into Eastern Orthodoxy and finding so many answers there, like, this is a better approach to understanding myself, self, and belonging and meaning in the sense of this community, as opposed to just my unique set of beliefs, or something that was like a transition there from coming from Protestantism into Eastern Orthodoxy that I found absolutely fascinating. And I think as Orthodox coaches, we kind of have this distinctiveness in how we approach the whole field because of that, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, just one thing that comes to mind, James, as you're talking is I think of a lot of the high performing individuals, either entrepreneurs or we see this in amongst athletes as well, you know, and not to discredit the achievements that they've had, but you hear a lot of this kind of chip on the shoulder motivation. It's like, you know, everybody else was against me. I did this on my own and look what I achieved. And that, you know, that notion that the world is against me is this driver for, turns into this driver for people. And there's no denying that it for many it leads to success in that particular field that they're interested in.
They did what on they the set out
hand,
to do.
On the other hand, you know, you look at a lot of those people, and I can't say that I've seen the full data on this, but I'm just, you know, I think we can all think of examples of this, that while they have achieved success in one area, mm-hmm. that same I'll do it on my own frame of thinking has actually cultivated dysfunction in just about every other aspect of those same achievers' lives.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them, you know, at least, you know, folks like Elon Musk and others I've, you know, heard said, mm-hmm. or at least they acknowledge that that's true in some cases, but a lot of folks just go in denial about that. And they just think that's all part of the same, you know, everybody else is against me narrative.
This is what success looks like, you know?
Yeah. So I guess my argument would be, you know, what is perhaps that's a short-term fuel, you know, to think about that everybody else is against me. So I have to rely only on myself, but I'm not sure what, you know, if the cost of that in the end is actually worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So in looking at how do we develop this sense of belonging that is necessary to be fully human, right? The sense of integration and connection, particularly, you mentioned like sharing vulnerability in a safe place and talking about more than just work, bringing it out to a wider arena of topics to discuss and engage with. What are some of the core components to authentic connection that we can cultivate? What are some of those prerequisites to intentionally create a sense of belonging and thereby meaning?
Well, I was actually just recently participating in a session around this. So there are a few. I mean, there are probably many that we can think of. Some of the strongest that I can think of right off the top of my head, you know, gratitude. Ooh. You know, intentionally expressing and articulating gratitude for each other. Asking for help intentionally, you know, what's one area
humility.
Of your work or your life that you'd like some help in right now? You know, people, it's like when you go into the old, you know, standard job interview scenario where you go in and somebody asks you, what's your biggest weakness? And everybody kind of thinks the game is to kind of come up with something that's not really a weakness. Oh, I work too hard. You know? I care too much. You know, and so when we can actually practice genuine humility, genuine request for assistance, for help, vulnerability, you know, when we can acknowledge, you know, one of the workshops that I do is kind of a mindset and kind of attitudinal assessment of each person on the team. And we all have kind of default settings. And some of those settings we don't love, but acknowledging that under stress, I am a tyrant, you know, or under stress, I fold like a cheap suit, you know, acknowledging those things is how we begin we begin to grow, but also how we invite our team to actually do what teams do, which is support each other when we're not at our best you know, and so that we can all succeed together carrying each other's burdens when that needs to be done. We can't do that if we don't actually know the burdens that that each other are carrying. So, you know, mindset, humility, gratitude, those are a few of the areas that where we can go and dive into this stuff.
I remember you mentioned gratitude and it came to mind a local organization here in Fargo, the Downtown Community Partnership, actually. And I was talking with one of the gals there, and I was talking about their company culture and how I might be able to help them and things. And she brought up that one of the things that they have, and I thought this was amazingly cool, that they just have, you know, in their shared company, Google Drive or whatever, they have a document where all of the people who work there have like a profile that they just keep up to date. They put stuff in there and it has like, you know, people's favorite colors, their favorite flavors, their love languages, you know, these kinds of things, like an operator's manual for them on if you want to show me appreciation, here's how you do it. If you want to go, you know, buy me ice cream on a whim, you know what kind of ice cream I like. If you want to, you know, buy me some flowers, you know what colors of flowers I like. You know, if you want to express gratitude, do you send me a note or do you, you know, pull me aside for, you know, a quick chat? So quality time, or do I appreciate hugs more than a gift? And these kinds of things. And they have this whole profile that just everybody just has there. So you can, as a system where people can spontaneously, there's like a planned way to create spontaneity for people to actually help each other and show gratitude for each other. That was such a beautiful, beautiful thing and so valuable. I wish more companies should do that.
Yeah, well, I imagine that some of your listeners are probably hearing something like that or hearing about this gratitude exercise and, mm-hmm. and cringing. They're like, oh, that just feels so contrived. That feels so, that feels so, you know, disingenuous.
If you don't do it.
Well, so I guess the analogy I would use is, you know, anybody who's tried to learn something new, I'm a mediocre golfer. But I, one time I was going,
I took
lessons. I went and got some lessons in golf and I was okay. I mean, I'm an okay golfer. I can manage. But the golf instructor, what I sort of was saying, I had a pretty bit of a nasty slice. And so the ball would just end up, you know, about, you know, several feet to the right of where I would want it to go usually. Mm-hmm. And so I was compensating by aiming left. And so eventually it would go less as, you know, a shorter distance, but at least it was in the middle of the fairway. Well, the instructor, you know, I went to the instructor and said, I'd really like to be able to hit straight, please. and so the instructor looked at my swing and he said, well, here's a couple things that you need to adjust. Mm-hmm. Well, it was extraordinarily difficult to adopt those new practices. It felt incredibly uncomfortable and I was terrible at it at first. Mm. And it was just, it was uncomfortable. And every athlete—
Did it feel unnatural?
Unnatural. Every athlete who's ever made an adjustment to the way they perform, by the way, this is the same in music too. If you're a piano player or, mm-hmm. or a musician of any sort and you make an adjustment to your technique, mm-hmm. it's the same thing. It mm-hmm. feels awkward and contrived and fake or whatever it is.
For a computer programmer, it's like changing your IDE, which editor you're going to use. It feels horrible at first.
It does, until your muscles adopt a new muscle memory and then it starts to flow and the shots go straight. It's the exact same way with these things that we're talking about now.
Yeah,
you're not always going to go and key in and reference the files on so and so to talk, but you're beginning to cultivate the habit of being mindful of how this person actually appreciates to receive kindness.
Right.
They have a certain way that expressions of kindness really resonate deeply with them. And over time, you're going to learn that. But you only start to learn that when you actually take the time to actually ask the question and then remind yourself of the answers. Absolutely. The same is true with these sort of awkward first sessions around gratitude and other things. It sounds contrived. It sounds like you're extracting things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stay that way. As you build the habit of being open and authentic and humble and grateful with each other, then it just flows. And that's when you have real cohesion on your team.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah, because that is something that people struggle with. There's a lot of, and it might come from that, you know, differentiation of the work and the home life. And like there's pragmatics here and soft skills are over there.
Yeah.
And like this huge distinction between like, you know, our work, we focus on work stuff, which is, you know, your bottom line and your matrix and all of your tangibles, right? Mm-hmm. But the more we're finding, the more that you can't do that. There are no really soft skills that don't have hard impacts, that there's all of these things. We are whole people.
Yeah.
And in order for us to be able to perform and be productive, we need to be connected. Absolutely need to be. And these kinds of things, these disciplines and exercises for establishing, you know, gratitude and establishing that vulnerability and the humility and asking for help and being willing to help others. And creating a safe place for people to be able to do that and doing so with intentionality, even if it's awkward and difficult at first, but pushing through, being consistent with it will generate that authenticity. That means that people are going to feel a sense of belonging and loyalty to the company and to the project, which means there's more motivation and there's going to be less burnout. Because that's like the more research I do about burnout, like this, when this right here breaks down, that's when burnout happens. It's not too much work. It's a bad relationship with the people who are giving you the work.
For sure. Yep. That's definitely a huge part of it. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for coming in here and sharing this. I thought some fascinating and really epic practical things that we can do to develop better connections in remote teams and or in-person teams, either way. Yeah, because we're people, absolutely. Either direction. So I really appreciate your time here and for joining us. And I look forward to having you back again, hopefully, in future episodes.
Thank
you
so much. It was my pleasure. Thanks, James.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you had your curiosity sparked to explore these subjects with greater awareness or gained a valuable insight along the way. Take a look at the show notes for links to where you can find Sean Reed, leave reviews wherever you can, and make sure to join the conversation on my Discord. Community is the catalyst that drives lasting transformation, after all. I'll see you in the next episode of Catalytic Curiosity.